Thursday, April 14, 2011. I'm Albert Moeller, and this is The Briefing, a daily analysis of news and events from a Christian worldview. Revolutions are easier to stop than to finish. That's the lesson as we watch what's happening in Egypt. Reports coming out in recent days indicate that former President Hosni Mubarak is now under arrest for at least 15 days, even as he had collapsed with an apparent heart ailment during an interrogation as he was being investigated for charges of corruption. Along with him under arrest are his two sons, and the reality is that what we now see in Egypt is an unraveling of the revolution that had begun with so much hope just a matter of a few weeks ago. Revolutions begin as there is a fervor on the streets that often leads to the kind of social unrest that demands change. Coalitions develop, and in Egypt it was clear that the military had made an allegiance with the students on the street. However, in the days that followed, it became clear that that was not the allegiance that mattered. What really mattered was the alliance that had taken place between the military and the religious extremists, in particular the Muslim Brotherhood. What has happened in recent days is that the military has now been under great pressure from demonstrators on the street, including the Muslim Brotherhood, to make changes, and in particular, to bring about some kind of revenge, or what is, of course, characterized as justice, on the Mubarak regime in general, including all of its allies, and in particular, the former president himself. We'll see what happens there, but at this point, there are ominous signs coming out of Egypt that this revolution is now devolving into something that is little more than a new tyranny to replace an old. The army, it is reported, killed two demonstrators in recent days and has arrested and tortured scores more. The new regime is sounding more and more like the old regime. Christians observing this need to remember that when order breaks down in terms of a revolutionary furor, what often happens is, of course, the rise of a new despotism. That's one of the bitter lessons of the French Revolution, where a despotic monarchy was replaced by an absolutely tyrannical new kind of despotism. That despotism, of course, known as the Terror, and eventually replaced by the emperor himself, Napoleon Bonaparte. You gotta be careful what you ask for. When you unleash that kind of unrest, it is often disaster that ensues. It should make us all the more appreciative of the ordered liberty that came out of the American Revolution, one of the relatively very few revolutions in world history that had a happy ending. Just a matter of a few weeks and months ago, the political pandocracy had been suggesting that the 2012 presidential election would be almost all about economics, with social issues and moral issues left far behind in the dust of political races past. Well, that prediction now looks rather foolish, as social and moral issues have now arrived on the front leading edge of political debate in this country. Just in the last few days, this has become clear. USA Today had a headline, "Fights Brew on Abortion Rights," with a chart going state by state, indicating a multiplicity of efforts to place some limitation upon abortion rights state by state. Now, one of the things that becomes clear as we observe the media coverage of this kind of development is that the media elites, mirroring the larger group of intellectual elites, well, they are absolutely frustrated that an issue like abortion is back front and center in our national debate. The elites just don't understand why this issue hasn't gone away. As they see it, the 1973 Roe v. Wade decision should have settled the matter. That 5-4 vote, in which the justices in the majority simply invented a woman's right to an abortion, they considered to be the last word, because according to their worldview, a right to abortion is absolutely necessary in order for women to have the kind of freedom that women deserve to have, a freedom that extends even to the choice to kill the innocent life within them. Now, another thing that is becoming clear as we look at this picture with the 2012 race ahead of us is that the incumbent president, President Barack Obama, is not going to escape the issue of abortion. Rewind to the controversy in recent days over the threatened shutdown to the federal government. You'll recall that many in the media had suggested that Republicans are bringing about a crisis in terms of our government by pressing for a defunding of Planned Parenthood. They pointed out that's a relatively small amount of money, a relatively minuscule issue on the political landscape. Why should it be the tripwire? But as William McGurn of the Wall Street Journal points out, we now know that as the budget negotiation reached their feverish end, it was President Barack Obama who made Planned Parenthood the absolute non-negotiable. He insisted, of course, on funding Planned Parenthood, and we now know that he was willing to let the government go into a shutdown in order to preserve the funding for that organization. By the way, if you're looking for a statistic, consider this one. 97% of all pregnant women who seek services from Planned Parenthood have an abortion. The federal funds that go to Planned Parenthood are not to go directly to abortion, but as money is moved around within an organization, there's no way to avoid the fact that subsidizing Planned Parenthood is actually subsidizing abortion. As Lee McGurn reminds us, President Barack Obama, when he ran for office in 2008, was recognized as being the most pro-abortion candidate for president in American history. He is, after all, the one who just a few years ago, as a state senator in Illinois, voted against even a ban on partial birth abortions. You can count on that issue coming back as the presidential election heats up. And by the way, at least some in the media are noticing why. One pundit recently noted that the reason why the issue of abortion won't go away is because so many Christians continue to believe that every single human life is a human being made in the image of God and thus worthy of protection. Well, at least they got that right. This week, USA Today has had some rather unusual coverage about young girls. In a front-page story, for instance, it talked about early puberty happening now among so many girls. At least 15% of American girls go into puberty now at about age 7. As one specialist said, we've shortened the childhood of girls in America now by about a year and a half over the last 30 years. Those are ominous developments with implications not only for the health of these girls in the future, but also for the likelihood of their behavior. Early sexualization is a problem. Now, the article considers reason why this might be happening: environmental causes, ecological causes, medical causes, dietary causes. And one of the issues they point to is that if girls are overweight, they are far more likely to go into early puberty. But the more interesting article published by USA Today also has to do with early sexualization, but it doesn't have to do with puberty. In an article on the early sexualization of girls that followed the articles on puberty, it deals with the fact that many girls are now being highly sexualized in terms of their imagination and their knowledge, in terms of their cultural awareness and their cultural icons, even if they're not going into early puberty. In a new book, So Sexy, So Soon: The New Sexualized Childhood and What Parents Can Do to Protect Their Kids, Jean Kilburn points out that it's now a hard time to be raising children. That many kids are being turned into consumers, marketers are turning them into old people before their time, and too often, they're also turning them against their parents. As the report says, many parents trying to raise healthy kids say they feel as if they're doing battle with the culture, trying to shelter their kids from an onslaught of trash, from sugary sodas to violent videos. Now, when you actually look at the content of this article, there's some fairly frightening stuff here. For instance, one of the things covered is that Walmart is now getting ready to offer a cosmetic line for girls ages 8 to 12. This, the paper says, has created an uproar even before the product is debuted. And then, of course, there is the ubiquitous advertising and all of the commercial entertainment that's going on that demonstrates and portrays girls in highly sexualized behaviors, highly immodest dress, and highly eroticized situations. And make no mistake, all of this is being noticed by young girls who are beginning to mirror these kinds of behaviors, to want this kind of dress, and to emulate this kind of early sexualization and eroticization. Now, it's interesting that a secular newspaper such as USA Today and secular psychologists are beginning to notice the problem. But one of the things we need to note here is that even as many parents are complaining about this in the culture, they're complaining about the early sexualization, they're complaining about the kinds of behaviors they see their children trying to emulate, many of the parents, on the other hand, are also part of the problem. Some of these very mothers are the agents of sexualizing their girls early. The Wall Street Journal, just a couple of weeks ago, ran a story in which the major point was that many mothers are actually purchasing, and not only purchasing, but demanding this kind of sexualized clothing for their daughters. That tells us something about how the world has changed, not only in the culture around us, but in the culture within us. And then, if all that isn't interesting enough, the New York Times has run a major story on the MTV series Teen Moms. This TV franchise is put in the category of reality TV, though most of these reality shows are at some obvious distance from reality. Now, the interest in teen moms is building not only among teenagers, but amongst the larger culture. The population watching television, and especially MTV, seems to have developed an absolute fascination with these teen moms. As Jan Hoffman of the New York Times reports, Americans seem to be truly fascinated by these teen moms, and the fascination itself is becoming something of a cultural interest. For one thing, these girls have become glamorized. There's really no other word for it. Their exposure on television and our celebrity culture means that many of the teenage girls watching these teenage moms see all the attention that these moms are getting. And then some of the media have also noticed that these girls are now sporting cosmetic enhancements. There seem to be some real suggestions in this programming that becoming a teen mom can also be a route to some kind of celebrity or to an enhancement in one's status. The situation among young women and young girls is complicated enough. One of the problems we have in the media is that programs that are called reality TV are almost assuredly not a reflection of reality. The very presence of a television camera added to a television audience means that there is a distortion of the reality. A celebrity culture intrudes, and what we were supposedly watching just as a value-neutral observer, well, it becomes a matter of entertainment in which, well, there's obviously a taste that develops for the entertainment content. In this case, we need to recognize that the last thing America needs is to glamorize those who have babies out of wedlock. And furthermore, one of the things we need to recognize is that the reason sex educators seem to be so thrilled with this program is that its content would be of alarm to many, many American parents. By the way, this article in the New York Times indicates that even though we have a highly sexualized culture, many teenagers and young adults, they say, have an inadequate exposure and capacity to reach sex education. The resources are simply not available to them. One has to wonder how in the world this could be. When you put it over against the very fact that this report indicates that a vast number of Americans are watching programs such as this, not to mention all that is available through educational sources, through medical sources, and for that matter, just about at every click of the internet. What we're talking about here is a fanaticized culture that simply will not rest, at least as the elites are pushing the agenda of sex education, until it is evidently just about the only thing that Americans talk about. Thanks for listening to The Briefing. I'm in Chicago one more day for the meeting of the Gospel Coalition, where I've just been tremendously encouraged by about 5,300 younger pastors and Christians who are gathered here for this event. I'll be looking forward to reporting to you tomorrow for The Briefing from Louisville, Kentucky. In the meantime, for more information, go to my website at albertmohler.com. You can also follow me on Twitter by going to twitter.com/albertmohler. For more information about the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, go to sbts.edu. For information about Boyce College, go to boycecollege.com. I'll meet you again tomorrow for The Briefing.